Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Laveau. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization is a peculiar thing. It claims to be a defensive military alliance, but it aggressively expands, and that expansion is directed at Russia. And its client state, Ukraine, is losing a war NATO actively supports. Essentially, NATO has decided to double down on failure. Crosstalking NATO, I'm joined by my guest, Scott Ritter in Dalmar. He's a former intelligence officer and a United Nations weapons inspector. In Tasmania, we have Ted See. He is a conflict consultant and a retired U.S. Foreign Service officer. And in Madrid, we have Wyatt Reed. He is a journalist with Sputnik News. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Scott, let me go to you first here. You know, I'm just a talk show host. I'm not the smartest guy on earth. But, you know, let me ask you a simple question. This new strategic concept that NATO is developing here in Madrid, what I would say 30 blind mice joining together. So the West is expanding NATO again in response to a war predominantly caused by NATO expansion. Is this wrong? Do I misunderstand something here? Go ahead, Scott.
No, I think you've encapsulated actually perfectly. I mean, you know, the other interesting thing happened is NATO finally said, look, we're not partners with Russia anymore. Well, NATO hasn't been a partner with Russia ever. NATO's never taken partnership with Russia seriously. And we now know, thanks to Jan Stoltenberg's maybe slip of the tongue, that NATO has been preparing to fight Russia since 2014. Okay. That is, for the last 8 years. So all we're seeing right now is NATO finally being honest, you know, and saying, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. It's what they wanted to do all along, to reinvigorate the alliance, stripping away any pretense of being a defensive organization, and acknowledging straight up that its sole purpose is to confront Russia. I'd advise the NATO people to take a closer look at what's going on in Ukraine, where the NATO proxy is being destroyed, before seriously trying to confront Russia. But at least they're going to go through the motions.
Okay, Ted, so it's very interesting here. So there's no longer a pretense to pan-European security, because if you want pan-European security, you have to include Russia. But really what now we've had, and Scott's right from, you know, I would say essentially from the very beginning of NATO and of course after the end of the Cold War, this is directed at Russia, excluding Russia. You cannot have pan-European security without Russia. That's something they don't seem to understand or want to acknowledge. Go ahead, Ted.
Peter, I have to agree. For many years, I've been saying that NATO claims to have partnership arrangements, if not more than that, with just about everyone in Europe, although very clearly that's not the case anymore. And you know, the mask has finally slipped, the cat's finally out of the bag. But for many years, it was only practical allies like, say, Germany, who didn't want conflict with Russia, who insisted that there was no way that they would support Russia being named as public enemy number one for NATO. Well, that's finally changed. Now Russia is the most significant and direct threat to allies' security and to peace and stability in the Euro-Atlantic area.
Okay. So Wyatt, you're there in the belly of the beast, as it were, here. The facts being created on the ground, on the battlefield in Ukraine, doesn't seem to really impact their thinking whatsoever. You would think just the reverse, you know, like, wow, this hasn't worked out. They're facing a catastrophic strategic defeat, and they just double down. I mean, this is a pathology here. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Wyatt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at some of the remarks coming out of Jens Stoltenberg, for example, NATO Secretary General, and they're practically giddy. They view this as an incredible opportunity, it seems. And now it's not just Russia, obviously, but it's China as well. You know, this document published by NATO cites a deepening strategic partnership between the People's Republic of China and the Russian Federation, and their mutually reinforcing attempts to undercut the rules-based international order. They say this runs counter to our values and interests as NATO. So obviously now it seems, you know, it's not just a nominally defensive alliance aimed at remilitarizing Europe back to Cold War levels against Russia, but now against China as well. So really, yeah, I think I'd have to agree with your other guests and say it's really impossible to interpret what's happening in Europe as anything other than remilitarization back to Cold War era levels.
Exactly. Scott, in this, in, with the adding Sweden and Finland here, which, you know, the NATO's border with Russia now is expanded like 800 kilometers, this is far more dangerous with its expansion now. Now, of course, the Russians have made it very clear that they're not so miffed about that because they don't have any issues with them. But, you know, the more countries that NATO countries that border Russia, the more there is the likelihood of something going wrong. And I think that this is kind of a game of chicken that is very, very dangerous and is why it is said here. I mean, this is a NATOization of Europe. It is the militarization of Europe, when actually, if you look what's going on in Ukraine, everyone should draw the opposite conclusions. Like, look, it didn't work out. We ended up in a conflict here. Maybe we should totally rethink it. They're nowhere going near that. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I've taken from the NATO summit is that they are aggressively pursuing a notional reconfiguration of NATO, meaning, you know, we are going to transform from a 40,000 strong ready force to a 300,000 strong ready force. They ain't got the 300,000. The United States is going to put the Fifth Corps headquarters in Poland. That's just a headquarters. There is no Fifth Corps. And my point is, they're putting all this pie in the sky stuff out there. While who's going to pay for it? I mean, Germany says we're going to build, you know, spend 100 billion euros to rebuild the German military. Not with the economy they're going to have after this winter. What's Europe going to use for money? What are they going to use for fuel? The point is, they're putting this very aggressive framework in place, but they don't have anything to cover it with. And by expanding NATO into Finland and Sweden, as they're talking about, as they're apparently going to do, all they're doing is guaranteeing that there will be additional points of tension.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you want to fight the Russians, you better have more than a PowerPoint presentation about a theoretical 300,000 troops before you cross that line of departure, because Russia's troops aren't theoretical. They're really in Ukraine, and they're really kicking butt.
You know, Scott, if I could just finish off with you here, I find it kind of interesting historically that we could see German tanks in the Baltic republics. I mean, there was a major conflict to get them out of the Baltic republics during the Second World War. It's really kind of eerie that way. Ted, let me shift to you over in Tasmania.
Can I just add one thing here real quick? Yeah, we may see German tanks in the Baltics. If they continue, we'll see German tanks destroyed once again in the Baltics.
Okay, that will be a topic for another program here. Let me go to Ted right now. The other side of all of this is that the mask is off. I mean, Russia knows who its adversaries are. It doesn't have to listen to all of the claptrap and the boilerplate nonsense from Brussels anymore. They know that they're being targeted as an enemy here, and Russia will take response to that, obviously. So, I mean, I don't see what progress security in Europe has been made at all here. Go ahead, Ted.
Peter, I couldn't agree more, and I've been going around saying for a very long time that as a former diplomat, I always think that jaw-jaw is better than war-war, to quote Winston Churchill. But when you're facing an alliance against, you know, for a long time, an alliance against nobody, because no one in NATO would take credit for actually being an anti-Russian alliance. Right. And now, finally, the mask is slipping. We're finally seeing who they're worried about and who they're planning against and who they're making, you know, these preparations, as Scott says, at the moment it's a PowerPoint presentation. But if you look through these documents that have just appeared, there's some pretty astonishing stuff being written. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to quote a couple more little tidbits, because some of it is really frightening if you look at the implications. They're strengthening the alliance and accelerating its adaptation. Okay. Someone wants to tell me what they're adapting to more strongly, I'd be really interested in hearing. But even something that sounds innocuous, like significantly strengthening our deterrence and defense. Okay, 40K to 300K rapid reaction force, that's strengthening defense if it ever happens. Okay, how do you strengthen deterrence?
Yeah.
More nukes? Better nukes? More and better nukes. What are the options? So there's a lot of stuff in here that's really kind of frightening. And again, I return to accelerating its adaptation. What exact? There's not one word in any of these documents that hasn't been wrangled over for weeks by minions like I used to be. Okay, so there's nothing in there by accident. So what do they mean by accelerating its adaptation?
I'll tell you what I think it means, Ted, is that NATO wants to replace the United Nations. It'll be an organization of the willing under the United States, and it will, you know, NATO will say, these are our sanctions, which, of course, all of these sanctions coming out of Europe and the United States are illegal under international law. They were not sanctioned by the United Nations. NATO wants to expand to the east. It wants to be the world body that makes decisions. And that's another topic for another program. Wyatt, I mean, you're in the belly of the beast. What is the mood like? I mean, what is the mood of a military alliance getting together? I mean, are there cocktails or the buffet? I mean, what's the mood like there?
Well, among the NATO elite, yeah, I'm sure they are quite enjoying themselves. The picture outside of the Four Seasons Hotel is a little bit different. I mean, aside from just attempting to navigate this sort of labyrinth that's been created around NATO to make sure that it doesn't actually have to deal with any of the rabble, that's a major pain. I mean, you have these essentially military checkpoints being erected that block off traffic that make it so that, for example, to get back to my hotel, I had to walk 20 blocks to go a span of 3 blocks. That's a pretty typical experience, I think, for your average person in Spain. And just in terms of the kind of social conditions, the economic conditions, I want to say this month, Spain hit a 37-year high in terms of inflation. This has had devastating consequences in terms of, you know, the fuel prices, in terms of food prices, all of these as a direct consequence of the West's illegal, as you note, sanctions against Russia, against one of the world's greatest energy and fertilizer suppliers, have had extremely predictable results. And the people who are paying the price are not these elites.
Well, it's the little people that will pay the cost. It's not these decision makers here. We're going to go to a short break, gentlemen, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on NATO and its ambitions. Stay with RT.
Знаходимося для того, щоб від імені американського народу висловити вам підтримку.
Free world is with you. America is with you. I am with you.
Але вони зрозуміли, що ми не раби, і що за їхні злочини прийшла їхня кара. І я зараз тут ми перемогли. Сьогодні окупанти! Горонеті!
Завтра підемо разом вперед. Якщо куля в лоб, то куля в лоб.
В мае 2014 года было дикостью предположить, что украинская авиация будет бомбить города.
Залп сделал. Изверг.
Антитеррористическая операция не может и не будет тривати 2-3 месяца.
Говорят, что здесь одни террористы. Какие террористы?
Putin is the aggressor. Today, I'm authorizing additional strong sanctions.
Today, Russia is the country with the most sanctions imposed against it, a number that's constantly growing.
Стратегія сейчас направлена на сокрушение российской экономики, на нанесение максимального ущерба.
We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy.
Sucks, like, we're suffering the price for something that's happening in another country.
Вопрос узловой, который сейчас решается, это судьба доллара как мировой резервной валюты.
Joe Biden, in imposing these sanctions on Russia, you know, has destroyed the American economy. So there's your boomerang effect.
Thank you. truths seem wrong, when old rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing NATO and its ambitions. Okay, let's go back to Scott. Scott, it's going to happen. I don't know the timeline, but the Ukrainian military will be utterly destroyed. Basically, the way I look at it, Ukraine has turned into a failed state. Will be very much, whatever is left of it, will be very dependent on the EU. How is NATO going to react to this, considering the festive activities in Madrid right now?
Yeah, that's one of the unknowns. NATO's setting itself up for failure. And NATO can't afford another failure. I think people tend to forget that a year ago, NATO was inflicted one of the greatest embarrassments in its history, the defeat in Afghanistan, the requirement to withdraw precipitously because the United States, its greatest supporter and underwriter, abandoned it in Afghanistan and abandoned the mission. It was a failure. And yet here we are a year later, and NATO's setting itself up for a failure of an even greater magnitude. There is no serious military analyst in the world who thinks that Ukraine can turn this around. You can pump as much NATO equipment into Ukraine as you want. Hell, give them everything NATO has short of a nuclear weapon, and it won't change the outcome because the Ukrainian army has been destroyed, devastated. It's lost the majority of its trained forces. It's pouring in untrained personnel into a conflict where the Russians have superiority across the board. The only guaranteed outcome is more death and destruction. I don't think Ukraine will survive as a nation state. That's how serious this defeat will be. And then what's NATO going to do?
Yeah, Ted, you know, right prior to the confab of NATO, we had the G7 meeting, and basically they came out with the line pledging support for Ukraine, quote, for as long as it takes. Did anybody in the West vote for that? I mean, you know, Wyatt just told us about the conditions in Spain, you know, the highest inflation in recent memory. And that's only going to get worse. I mean, winter is coming. And if you look at the way Europeans are dependent on Russian energy, which is really quite comical. You know, we have to cut off the Russians, but then they're going to be desperate for energy, and then they're going to blame Russia anyway, which, of course, is a topic for still another program here. But, I mean, whatever it takes, what does that mean, okay? I mean, Ukraine cannot be fail, cannot be defeated. Well, just as Scott said, no one in their right mind thinks it's going well for the Ukrainians. How do you react to that? Go ahead, Ted.
Well, two quick points. One is that there are multiple layers of energy trouble out there. One of them, obviously, is the current conflict taking place in Europe. But another is the dedication that many states have made in a trendy way, as they alluded to in Glasgow a few months ago, that they're going green, they're getting rid of fossil fuels, and they're going to replace them with renewables, except they aren't because they can't, because there's no baseload power provided by renewables. And until they get massive nuclear, batteries that are capable of backing up and offering baseline support to renewables, you won't see anyone be able to rely on them. Here in Australia, it's wintertime, and a couple of states on the eastern seaboard have been within hours of brownouts, if not blackouts, because they've been shutting down coal-fired power plants faster than they can build windmills and solar cells. Second point, you quoted G7's language on Ukraine and support for it. I'll quote you NATO's language. We reiterate our unwavering support for Ukraine's independence, sovereignty, and territorial integrity within its internationally recognized borders extending to its territorial waters. But they left out the most important part, which is a little asterisk followed by, except in 2014.
Exactly. Okay. Well, it seems to me, we're in this kind of, you know, muddied environment here. We have these definitive statements from the G7 and NATO, and then you have, you know, like Joe Biden, I think it was 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, he's already hinted their off-ramp. Well, Zelensky didn't listen to us, you know. Somebody's going to have to take the fall for this, okay? And I cannot see under any circumstances the quote-unquote unity of the Europeans, which is a fiction in itself here. I mean, NATO's primary mission is to exist. We've all known that for a very long time. It's only to exist to keep it going, okay? Now, as Scott pointed out, the humiliation in Afghanistan was one thing, and now one. And then we have a president of the United States is, you know, an empty suit here. I mean, I can't see how they can put lipstick on this pig and say it's beautiful. Go ahead, Wyatt.
Well, now you have these admissions coming from the mainstream media. Just 2 days ago, CNN published a piece saying that White House officials are losing confidence that Ukraine will ever be able to take back all the land it has lost to Russia over the past 4 months. And I mean, you even have these admissions within this piece from a congressional aide that says whether Ukraine can take back these territories is in large part, if not entirely, a function of how much support we give them. So you do have this effectively recognition of the fact that what all of us have been saying for several months, which is that this is, in fact, a de facto NATO proxy war against Russia. This is not, plucky Ukrainian resistance somehow, despite all odds, fighting back against, you know, a country 10 times their size. No, this is a full-on military conflict at this point between the world's greatest defensive alliance and a one of the world's greatest military powers, which I think explains much more effectively why it is that Ukraine didn't immediately overnight succumb to the Russian military might.
Well, I mean, as Scott has said on this program before, and a lot of people don't acknowledge it, but for 8 years, the Ukrainian army was trained and equipped and moneyed by NATO, and it is a formidable force. I mean, the U.S. has bases in Europe. Turkey has a real army, and it has it meddles in its neighborhood. And then you have Ukraine, okay? Not the Germans, not the French, not the Italians, not Lithuania. And this is a real military force that's been being slowly but surely destroyed. But Scott, I have a question for you, or maybe more of an observation here, is that, you know, we have Russia, quote unquote, being isolated on the world stage, which has not happened. Okay, as a matter of fact, I think if you look outside of the Western world, the conclusion that you draw is that Russia stood up to the collective West and is winning. Scott.
No, it's. I think what we're looking at here in The gentleman in Tasmania, I apologize for not remembering his name, Ted, rightly pointed out, you know, there is no difference between the G7 meeting this year and the NATO summit. They're one and the same. They're the same people talking about the same issues. And they've reached a conclusion. Peter, you said something that was extraordinarily important, that what is being defended here is the rules-based international order, and NATO has become a supplementary military power projection capability of the United States to continue this. The G7 exists to promulgate this, and Russia and China have come together and said that they are going to destroy this, that they're going to replace it with the law-based order, the United Nations Charter, and it appears that the majority of the world is rallying behind Russia and China. This is a losing fight for the United States. This is a losing fight for NATO. The only question now is how much damage they're going to be able to do as they go down.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Ted, you know, if you look at Western meddling around the world, we can look at Afghanistan, we can look at Iraq, we can look at Syria. You know, that for the average working person, that will pop up on the news maybe and they're driving to work or something like that. And what is the economic impact on them? Maybe nothing. Maybe it's negligible. But now this is a conflict that everybody feels in the West. This is the first time we've had in modern history where the West goes out on one of its adventures and everybody feels it every single day. That is not sustainable in democracies. Go ahead.
absolutely agree, Peter. If I could, I'd like to make one more point about NATO, since I worked there during the last period of my foreign service career. I want to talk about Article 5, which people seem to think is a guarantee for mutual defense. It's not. It's nothing of the sort. It means that we'll think about coming to your defense you're a NATO ally, something bad happens to you. But I want to quote the language from paragraph 27 of the new strategic concept. We will invest in our ability to prepare for, deter, and defend against the coercive use of political, economic, energy, information, and other hybrid tactics by states and non-state actors. Hybrid operations against allies could reach the level of armed attack and could lead the North Atlantic Council to invoke Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty. Okay, so what they're saying now is, in the wrong circumstances, if you send out mean tweets, we might nuke you.
Yes, and also, if I could add on to it, your carbon footprint is too big, okay? All right, and where are those transgender schools, okay? What it is, this is, you know, moving the goalposts. This is exactly, I'm really glad you brought that up, Ted, because anything could be a pretense to invoke, you know, Article 1 and then Article 5 here. We're rapidly running out of time here. Wyatt, again, if I can go back to what's going on in Madrid here, have there been protests against the confab?
There was a major protest on Monday. Thousands of people came out from all across Spain to reject
expansionism. What were they saying? I mean,
They were calling to pull Spain out of NATO. They were calling to restore real, actual strategic autonomy to Europe, to be able to function, you know, in the interests of Europeans as opposed to in the interests of the small ruling elite in the United States. And they were denouncing NATO as an imperialist bloc. So, I mean, you have a pretty vociferous rejection from many thousands of Spaniards of this summit, of what it represents. Obviously, none of that was reported in the mainstream media because it's not particularly convenient to demonstrate that the feelings of actual Spaniards run completely contrary to what we're hearing on the news from Biden, from Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. You do have a pretty thorough rejection of the principles being espoused here, but obviously, you know, we're just not going to hear about it.
Well, G7 and NATO, don't confuse that with democracy and the people's will, because they are antithetical, gentlemen. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Dalmar, Madrid, and in Tasmania. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.